I call Senate Resources to order. Today is Friday, March 21st. The time is 3:30 p.m. Let the record reflect that. Committee members present, Vice Chair Senator Dyson, Senator French, Senator Bishop, and myself, Senator Giesel. Senator McGuire is excused today. Recording Secretary Ann Krekelberg, and with her is Virginia from Virginia. She's here interning, visiting part of the Legislative Secretarial Organization, and Claire Gross is on our audio today. We have three items on the docket. First one will be Senate Bill 160, DNR Hunting Guides Concession Program. The second one will be Senate Bill 28, Susitna State Forest Sale of Timber. And lastly, if we have time, HB 161, Auction of Big Game Harvest Permits. So we'll start out with SB 160. So I will invite Chad Hutchinson to the table while he's coming. The committee heard testimony on Monday and Wednesday. We received numerous letters of both support and opposition. Committee members have those, and they're also posted on BASIS. So, Mr. Hutchinson, closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Chad Hutchinson. I'm the staff for Senator Coghill. I won't belabor the point, but we've heard a lot of pros and cons. I do believe that there's compelling reasons to support this bill. I think it's good for the resource. I think it's good for the resident hunters. And to a certain extent, it stops BLM and the federal government from filling the void if the state does not act. So I, for those reasons, I believe, and Senator Coghill believes, that we welcome your support for SB 160.
All right. Very good. Any questions for Mr. Hutchinson? All right. Seeing none. Mr. Menifee and Mr. Cox were going to be online. Are they, Claire? Okay, Mr. Cox. All right. Clark, can you hear us? Do you have any closing remarks?
Yeah, I'm here, and I do have some closing remarks, yes.
Great. Welcome. Go ahead and identify yourself and give us those remarks.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for the time. My name is Clark Cox with the State Department of Natural Resources. And as you know, we talked on Monday and Wednesday. I've been involved with this since 2007. We've heard a lot of testimony from committee members, from boards, the public, about the benefits and the cons to a program like this. It's one of those commercial use activities that we authorize. The big game guides are one of those activities we authorize. It's our primary interaction with the big game guides is through the issuance of permits, land use permits, and commercial recreation permits. We heard a lot about the impacts from the Board of Game and the Big Game Commercial Services Board and what they can do and how they regulate the industry. It's important to note that these boards both support the development of the guide concession program. The Board of Game can deal with conflicts and issues as they relate to wildlife, but it's difficult for them to deal with land use issues and overcrowding. The Board of Game can affect the numbers of hunters in the field by reducing the overall hunting opportunity, but not by regulating spatial distribution or boots on the ground. Only DNR can do that. The Commercial Services Board has rules that are based in statute, including those limiting and regulating the guides and where they register, and changes to how that would be done would be through legislative action. If I could, I'd like to touch on a couple of the comments, the primary ones that we heard from commenters. Would that be okay?
That would be great, Mr. Cox.
Thank you very much. One of the things we heard a lot about was, and maybe a concern that we saw that you might have had, was how the new guys might get in. And I wanted to touch on some of the differences between the full and the limited concession that we had developed. The primary difference is the number of employees that each one could employ. The full is allowed to employ up to six assistant guides, and the limited would be allowed to employ only one assistant guide. This allows for the selected full concession holders to offer more hunts, employ more staff, and operate a larger business. While the limiteds are offered to just one assistant, the limiteds were created for those folks who wanted to run fewer hunts or run smaller operations, and also gave them a chance, kind of like an apprenticeship, if you will, to be able to compete for a full at some point in the future by gaining experience in the area. Another common one we heard about was transferability. And we do understand the industry's desire to be able to sell and transfer these areas, but the Osacek decision made it very clear that was one of the primary faults of the prior system. And the Constitution, the Alaska Constitution and the Common Use Clause also make that a pretty steep hurdle to climb. We talked a lot about benefits, or we heard a lot about the benefits, or how it will or will not benefit the Alaska resident hunter. It's designed to benefit those hunters as well by reducing the number of big game guides in the more controversial areas, the more easily accessible areas, and to help decrease the conflicts in the field, to help increase the quality of the hunting opportunity, and increase wildlife conservation. Additionally, this whole concession concept is based on a competitive nature, and we'll be looking at the work of these applicants when they apply to us. They'll be scored in a number of factors, including their history of user conflicts and their strategies to avoid future conflicts. The GCP seeks to award concessions to those guides with cleaner histories in the field and in the courtroom. We also heard a lot about problems not existing statewide. There's only certain hot areas, and we agree with that. We recognize that as well. But this is one of those staggered options that we've talked about how could we stagger this and not impact the entire state. And the more we look at it, the more we realize if you just do small areas, you're just going to push those unselected guides into other outlying areas and create other problems elsewhere. Transporters is something we've heard from the very outset. From the very beginning of our public process back in 2007-2008, we have committed to conducting further research and evaluation on the transporters from our framework document. And we believe that we can address this group, but we would have to spend a lot more time working with transporters and better understanding the issue. A big one is we heard this, if implemented, this program would reduce the number of guides by 50-60%. In the packet that I provided to you on Monday, there were a few slides that had a pie chart with 2011 information. It showed the number of guides mastered and registered. It showed the number that actually ran a hunt. And it showed the numbers of available opportunities. So I would look that you could take a look at those numbers and kind of compare the available opportunities that would be available should this program exist. In addition, there's 44 million acres of private land here in Alaska that's also available to use. One thing we heard commonly through our process and through the testimony you heard was that the application process we established was simply a test or an opportunity for guides to hire someone to create and prepare a fancy application to win an area. DNR for the operation plan and commitments made therein to be incorporated into the authorization, and those authorizations will be evaluated annually to ensure the concession holders are operating consistent with the terms they were granted under. So in closing, you heard from many involved parties, both in support of the program and not, that the problems exist in the guiding industry and in the field, and that those issues need to be addressed. The program would be an additional tool for not only DNR, but also the Board of Game and the Big Game Commercial Services Board to use to address the issues of the industry. Stewardship and conservation are important aspects of the program for DNR. The mission of the program is to encourage land stewardship, support wildlife conservation, and to promote a healthy guiding industry to the benefit of the people of Alaska. We also understand that this is our first crack at this as far as developing a program like this. None of this is set in stone, and we intend on being able to be flexible and pliable enough to make changes to the program as time progresses. If anybody has any additional questions, I'd be happy to take some. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Cox? Committee members say no. Great. Any further discussion from the committee? Okay, seeing none. I would like to pass this bill out of committee. However, Senator French has left, and I am awaiting the arrival of a fourth committee member so we have a majority so we have a quorum so that we can pass the bill out. So Mr. Hutchinson will be waiting till we get that number of.
I understand, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All right, great. So I'm going to set this aside. We will address this, and I will entertain a motion to move this as soon as we get an additional committee member. So let's take a brief at ease. Let the record reflect that Senator Machicki has joined us. A quorum now exists, and I will turn to Senator Dyson. Do you have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 160, version 28-LS1399/A from committee with individual recommendations. Attached fiscal note.
Very good. Is there objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 160, version A, will pass out of this committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the transmittal documents. Back on the record. Next bill up before us is Senate Bill 28, Susitna State Forest Sale of Timber. Chris Meisch is here, from Director of the Division of Forestry. He's going to walk us through the bill, so I'll invite him to come forward. While he's coming to the table, in working with DNR, I have an amendment to the bill. You should have it. Okay, everybody has it. Perfect. So I move Amendment A1.
I'll object, Madam Chair, for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you. So this amendment will add intent language on page 2 of the bill. It removes certain parcels from the Susitna State Forest. So the intent language is a transportation objective for the forest to provide access for multiple use and timber management. And then there are segments being removed from the state forest that is originally in the bill. And I'm going to ask Mr. Meisch to speak to the amendment and the changes in the bill, and then take us through the bill.
Okay, thank you. For the record, my name is Chris Meisch. I'm the Director of the Division of Forestry and the State Forester. And thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I will speak to the amendment first. The amendment is based on the public process that we've been going through for this bill, comments by local government and others about concerns of needing additional lands close to communities for potential expansion of those communities, particularly near the communities of the City of Houston, Wasilla, and up along the East Corridor along the Parks Highway. So this proposed amendment would delete parcels that are on that east side strip that runs north-south. It's a relatively narrow corridor. If you have the map for you there, it's fairly obvious which parcels those are. I won't go through the actual legals. This would, in our opinion, garner additional support for this legislation. The other item, as noted, was an access amendment, and it specifically gives intent in the state forest, similar to the intent that already exists in the Tanana Valley State Forest, to specifically say we will access all parts of the state forest over time with a mixture of all-season and winter roads. So those are the two amendments that you proposed.
Great. Senator French, question?
Sure, thanks. I was just looking at the map I have, and I just wonder if Mr. Meisch could go through the amendment and just sort of summarize which parts are being removed, just generally, geographically, just so I have some idea. Thank
yes,
you.
Through the chair, Senator French. If you have that map before you, it's there's three, actually four
I guess
blocks.
I was just hoping you would relate them to the amendment, see what I mean? So. I can see that we start removing material on page 7, line 14. We're removing places. And so just maybe give me an idea of what each of those refer to geographically, because it's hard to tell by reading the legals.
Right. Madam Chair, Senator French, I can tell you the block names. I can't tell you exactly which lines those are, but there's four blocks.
Just getting close. Yep.
The first part is the northern parcels, which is the Talkeetna block on your map. The descriptions as you go down would address the Kashwitna parcel, the Willer-Cash parcel, and the Houston parcel. So those are four parcels that are enumerated on your map and I think are clear.
Talkeetna, Kashwitna, and
Willer-Cash.
All coming out on the first one?
And the Houston.
Okay.
As you go down through this whole list.
I see, okay.
Those are addressed, those are
one,
the four
two,
blocks.
Three, four. Got it. Okay. Thanks so much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Great. Further questions on the amendment? Yes, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So let me see if I got this right. So is everything, so the east side of the highway is going to be, is being stricken, and the west side of the highway is where the forest is going to be?
Senator Bishop, yes, the proposed forest would be all on the west side of the highway. The lands that are stricken will still be managed for forestry because they are classified in the area plan as forestry classified lands, are as all the other lands that are in this proposal and being nominated for a state forest. So those lands will not, they will continue to be used for forestry purposes, but at some point in the future when the area plans are updated, it would be easier to change the potential uses of those lands. And that was the concern we were hearing from the City of Houston, the Assembly for the Borough, and several other individuals that testified.
Thank you.
Good. Further questions for Mr. Mesh? All right. Senator French, do you maintain your objection?
No, Madam Chair, I will withdraw it.
All right. Thank you. So Amendment A1 is adopted. So, Mr. Mesh, if you would take us through the rest of the bill.
Yes. There's obviously two parts to this. One is the state forest portion, which I'll speak to first, and then we can circle back and take up the first part of the bill, which specifically addresses our timber sale authorities. But the state of Alaska owns and manages 9.5 million acres in the Matanuska Valley. And two area plans currently are identified for that area and have both recently been updated. It's the Matanuska-Susitna Area Plan and the Southeast-Susitna Area Plan. As you're aware, those plans are high-level allocations of different types of uses for state-owned land, state forest classified, recreation, habitat, disposal are some of the general classifications. So this proposal originally suggested 663,000 acres and 33 parcels. With this amendment, that amount of acreage drops down to 688,000 acres and 20 parcels, as we just discussed. But the purpose of the state forest, the primary purpose by statute, is for timber management that allows other multiple uses of the forest to continue. That was one of the key concerns we heard in various public meetings and other discussions with local governments in the valley, was that they wanted to be assured that the same type of use, the same scale of use would continue to occur on the state forest, and that is the case. In fact, we feel over time as we develop additional access that many of the uses of the state forest will benefit from that additional access, particularly from a hunting and habitat management standpoint, which were where many of those comments came from. As I mentioned, the primary use for the forest is timber management consistent with multiple use and sustained yield principles. The forest is also governed by the Alaska Forest Resources and Practices Act, which also affects state, municipal, and private lands in the state, and that primarily is designed to protect fish habitat and water quality. So there are mandatory stream buffers that are required in harvest units, and as you may recall, there's also a large amount of rivers already that have direct river corridors along them. In the valley that are a quarter mile on each side of the river. The forest management plan for the state forest must be completed within 3 years of the forest being established, and that process is a very extensive public process, including in the forest management plan we would establish a citizens advisory committee to help advise on uses and any potential conflicts that could develop in the forest. We have a citizens advisory committee on the Tanana Valley State Forest up in Fairbanks, and we do not have ones on the Southeast State Forest or the Haines State Forest because they are much smaller in size, and in the case of the Southeast State Forest, very remote, so there's not a lot of different users using those lands. So it's at our discretion as to whether we establish that citizen advisory committee or not. It would have 12 members. It would mirror the Board of Forestry that has 9 members, but it would represent a range of constituents, users, business, and local government in the valley. And as I said, they would be advisory, and they are appointed by the Division of Forestry, which would be myself as state forester. The management plan will address future transportation planning, timber sales, kind of all the standard things you would like to see in a plan about how we plan and intend to manage that piece of property. As I mentioned, there has been extensive public outreach, and I can just briefly run through that. We've had community meetings as part of the area planning process where the state forest concept was discussed starting in 2009. We've had 6 open houses across the valley that have occurred over that time frame. 2012, there were 12 public meetings in communities up and down the valley. We've had 10 meetings in 2013, including 2 webinars, which is a new feature for us to try and reach the more remote areas of the borough where people couldn't travel in easily to these community meetings, and those were actually pretty successful. It's pretty surprising how many people are actually wired in out in the bush, and they participated through that webinar process. So that was the first time we've tried that, and I think we'll continue to do that. We also have had 11 different news articles, radio stories, or other topics in the valley and publications statewide on the topic of the state forest. So I think it's been well vetted and discussed among the different interest groups that are out there. We also just recently received the support from the Matanuska-Sisseton Borough. At their Tuesday assembly meeting, they voted 6-1 in favor of a resolution of supporting the state forest concept. And there are numerous other letters in the record doing the same thing. So I might pause there and see if you have any questions on the state forest proposal as it stands, and then if not, I can continue on the timber sale portion of the bill.
Great. Questions? Senator Machicki?
Couple quick ones, Madam Chair. what's primary species? Is spruce and birch in that area?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, the primary species are spruce. White birch is the primary hardwood species, but there's also black cottonwood and cottonwood, and an occasional tamarack and aspen.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. And I didn't hear you talking about reforestation. What is the state practice for reforestation after harvest?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Machicki. We have 3 different regions in the state under the Forest Practices Act. That's one of the other things the Act does is require reforestation of harvested lands. This area occurs in Region 2 of the state, the South Central. It requires reforestation within 5 years of harvest. And that's in what we call a free-to-grow state. So it's a seedling that's essentially growing aggressively and vigorously. It's not overtopped by vegetation, grass, something of that nature.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions on the forest portion of the plan? All right, not seeing any. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, thanks. I'll continue on to the timber sale provisions and our timber sale authorities, and I'd like to give you a little background on our authorities because it'll help put in context what we're trying to do with this change. Currently, the Division of Forestry has 5 different statutes that allow us to sell timber using different methodologies. The first one, and I'll refer to these as by their last 3 digits, they're in Title 3805, and they go .115117, so that's our common shorthand notation for those sales. The sale method we use most frequently statewide is the competitive sale process. That's the .120 or 120 sales. Those are sealed bid or oral outcry sales that are offered in our different area offices, and just as it states, they're competitive, highest price gets the sale. We have a couple other sales to methods to encourage local and domestic manufacturing. In Southeast Alaska, if we offered all of our timber sales by the 120 process, all the logs would go to the round log export market because that is a much more valuable market and the domestic market cannot compete against that. So we've developed some other alternatives that still have a competitive piece in the front end but then allow us to negotiate the sale. We tried to do just round log export restrictions in the early, late 70s, and that case actually found its way all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the state lost that case because we were trying to regulate interstate commerce, and of course the state may not do that. So that's where the other authorities have sprung from, is creative ways to encourage domestic processing, creation of jobs, and more of an economy in the local communities. The first one is a 115 authority. That's small negotiated sales. Those are less than 500,000 board feet, so fairly small sales. Typically go to an operator that's a small commercial firewood operator or a small sawmill operator, usually a family mill or a very small business. The next one is our 117 authority, which are salvage sales. So after fire, insect and disease, wind throw, it's an expedited process to get that wood to market as quickly as we can to salvage some of the value from that wood. The 118 sales, which is the one of the topic of this piece of legislation, is our large negotiated sales, and they are often for much longer term. They can be up to 20, 25 years in length. I'll circle back to that one in just a minute. And then finally, our other authority is the 123 sale, which is value-added sales. They can be up to 10 years in length, and they're meant to provide raw materials to mills and facilities that add a high level of value to the product. So the pellet mill in Fairbanks would be an example of that. A sawmill that kiln dries its lumber would be another example. And you can find a list of materials that qualify for high-value production in regulation, and it's 11 AAC 71055 if you're interested in actually looking up that list. And so if a mill makes those types of products and wants to use the 123 authority, that's how we use that. Now, the 118 authority, going back to the topic of this bill, has three criteria that have to be in place for us to use it. It has to have a high level of local unemployment in the census district that the proposal is in. It has to have an underutilized annual allowable cut in the timber supply, and it has to have underutilized manufacturing capability at the facility that we'd use it. All three of those are hard to align, especially the high unemployment one. If you're in Fairbanks or the Mat-Su area, there are mills that certainly would qualify to use the 118, with the exception of the high local unemployment criteria. So this bill proposes to strike all three of those clauses. And that's essentially the change to the bill as currently proposed. That would make it easier for us to use and consistent across the state. The one other thing it does is currently the language in that statute refers to just timber. And to make that more inclusive and clear, we have added the word timber and fiber. And fiber just being more of a pellet, a wood chip, and just making it clear that we mean all types of wood products. I'll take any questions if you have any.
Questions, committee members, on the timber sales? Yes, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a comment. Your overview was very good, and you really know your timber.
Thank you.
I guess that's why he's the state forester, huh? Yeah. Any other questions? Yes, Senator
Just,
French.
I'm somewhat familiar with this legislation from having seen it proposed by the former state senator, Linda Menard. Is this very much like her legislation, or is it different?
Through the chair, Senator French, yes. The forestry proposal is essentially the same proposal that bill. At that time, though, it did not have the timber piece of it, or at least the change to the 118.
But in the intensely unlikely event that she's watching this hearing and listening in, she should know that we're still working on her bill.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you so much.
Great. Any other questions? All right, let's go to public testimony on Senate Bill 28. So I've got some folks here signed up. I'll start here in Juneau. Wayne Nichols is here. Wayne? After Wayne, we'll go to Wasilla and hear from Nick Steen. He'll be on the phone. But we'll start with Wayne. Welcome, Wayne.
Thank you. Do any of these make any difference?
Nope, doesn't make any difference. They all work. Claire will make sure you're heard.
My name is Wayne Nichols, and I'm a professional forester, certified forester. Over 50 years, a member of the Society of American Foresters, and I'm here. I'm a member of the Board of Forestry. I'm also an officer in the State Society of American Foresters, but I'm here on my own behalf to support the bill. And you've probably heard ad nauseum all kinds of figures and acreages and stuff like that, so I won't bore you further with that. But I'd like to try to add to the understanding of the value of a state forest. First of all, Alaska, for its size, is grossly under-equipped with state forests compared to other states like Minnesota, Wisconsin, the western states, and so forth. And there are a lot of benefits to having state forests. The primary benefit to me, and obviously I'm biased, is that it makes more possible management of the land by well-qualified professional people. And you just had an outstanding example of that right ahead of me here. And he manages a Division of Forestry, and it's full of, not nearly enough, but it has lots of also very well qualified professional people, not just foresters, but other disciplines that relate. You can't hear often enough, maybe, the fact that having being designated a state forest enables investments. Forestry is a 100 plus year proposition, and when you make certain investments like planting a tree, you don't have any possibility of recovering that investment, especially if the land is subject to being changed into some other kind of use, like in fact into private use and so forth. And then also roads and bridges, you can build better roads, better bridges, and so on. And there's a number of other treatments that the forest receives as a state forest, like pruning, thinning, and so forth. All of those are long-term investments, and in the status of a state forest, you could count on them still being in state ownership. And when those things become mature. I don't believe I have anything of further significance, but I'd be glad to answer questions if anybody has any.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Questions for Mr. Nichols? Yes, Senator Dyson.
Just thanks for your service.
Oh, thank you.
You're a legend in your time.
Oh, that makes me feel even older. Thank you.
Great. Any other questions for Mr. Nichols? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Let's see. Next in Wasilla, as I said, on the phone is Nick Steen.
Good afternoon, Senators. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on SB 28. I represent the Ruffed Grouse Society, and along with myself. The president of the South Central Chapter of the Ruffed Grouse Society, Dr. Michael Fuller, recently contacted several members of the legislature expressing opposition to SB 28 as written. Now, we enthusiastically support the concept of a state forest. However, the accelerated development in the Alaska Bowl and the Matanuska-Susitna valleys is transforming the character of our backyard into an urban sprawl. A forest would preserve public lands and resources for effective forest management that promotes economic use of our forest resources, enhances wildlife habitat close to our major population areas, and maintains a large block of land for public recreation. Our concern is the fractured nature of the boundaries as proposed. After reconsideration, Dr. Fuller has requested that I express his and the chapter's conditional support of SB 28. Our chapter has been working during the development of the Susitna-Matanuska Area Plan, or SMAP, to establish a state forest on all unencumbered state lands west of the Susitna River between the Beluga River and the south boundary of the Denali State and National Parks draining into the Susitna River. We oppose the SMAP plan as developed since it designated a series of non-contiguous lands for forest management interspersed with land designated as mining or for disposal as recreation and agriculture. This hampers effective forest management and restricts public use multiple use. SB 28 perpetuates this approach by identifying only the land designated for forest management by the SMAP plan as a Susitna Forest. SB 28 does not address the issues of access for effective forest management, uniform regulations for total area management, boundary identification for recreational use, and the loss of public access for recreational purposes by transferring land to private ownership. However, there is insufficient time, in our mind, in the legislative session to make the major changes needed to fix these issues. Therefore, we feel that getting the forest established is critical. We would like to support the current bill, but ask your help in making it more effective by considering modifications to the boundaries in future legislation. Additionally, we would like to ask, we would like to request that the legislature direct the Department of Natural Resources to suspend implementation of any land disposal programs in the SMAP west of the Susitna River until our concerns are addressed. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Steen. Questions for Mr. Steen? All right, not seeing any. Let the record reflect that we have been joined by Senator Fairclough. Welcome. So now the next person on, thank you, by the way, Mr. Steen, for your testimony. No questions. Next person to testify is Erin McLarnon, and she lives in Willow. After that, we'll go to the Anchorage LIO. Erin, can you hear us?
Sure can.
Oh, you're here. Sorry, I misunderstood. I thought you were in Willow and on the phone. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Erin McLarnon. I'm a 17-year Valley resident, as well as a 6-year member of the Board of Forestry, and I represent the recreational users of Alaska. I just wanted to take a moment of your time to express my personal support for the Susitna State Forest. Not only would this state forest create jobs and stimulate our economy over time, but it guarantees all users a place to recreate. I'm a 17-year long-distance dog musher, and I frequently utilize state forest lands for my training. And those training runs are some of my favorite runs because of the access, the trails, and the roads created during harvest. And I would love for more users to have those same opportunities. The local dog mushers in Willow, we have formed a really strong bond relationship with the Department of Forestry and DNR, as well as the logging operators. In September, we all come together, meet. They talk about their harvest plans, what's going to take place, and then we overlap our trails onto that. And then we work out, a lot of the operators will actually reroute our trails during harvest times so that we won't lose those training grounds that we have. We also have a 100-mile kids dog race in our trail system, and they actually suspend harvest for those 2 days, which is amazing because most of these areas, the areas I'm talking about, they were the ones that were taken out for the proposed part on the east side of the highway, but there, you know, there's logging there now. And that's mainly wintertime logging, but for them to shut down for 2 days to let us to recreate through there, I think is a great opportunity. So I support, and I hope you guys move this bill on down the trail. So,
great. Thank you, Erin, for your testimony. Any questions for Erin? All right, seeing none. Thank you. Next, at the Anchorage LIO, I have two folks online. The first one signed up is Rick Rogers. Rick, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes, very clear. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rick Rogers. I am here as the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council. I'm also a certified forester, having practiced forestry on and off throughout Alaska since 1981. So it's a privilege to be able to comment on a forest-related issue today. I think this SB 28, we are in support of SB 28. It really comes down to long-term commitment. It represents the state committing a long-term land base to promote good long-term sustainable forestry practices. This committee has had lengthy discussions about LNG over the last few weeks, and I did note that in those hearings, someone compared LNG deals to a marriage. And I would argue that forestry in comparison to LNG really makes LNG look like speed dating, because forestry is an extremely long-term commitment. We have forest rotations in Alaska that can span from 60 to over 100 years. And so if we're going to do the job right, if we're going to manage these lands to encourage long-term productive forest productivity, if we're going to encourage the private sector to invest in what it takes to harvest and process that timber to generate jobs and create wealth in our communities, then we need to commit the land base so they know that the state is committed and that the land's going to be available for those long-term investments. So as Director Mache already testified, the lands in question are already being managed for forestry. What the bill is doing is getting that legislative designation that really signifies that long-term commitment that the state's putting into this. And that'll encourage good silviculture, as Mr. Nichols testified. I also note that throughout the Mat-Su area, there's over 3 million acres of other legislatively designated lands for things like parks, refuges, and public use areas. So I think we need a balance to have a working forest designated. I think if we look to other examples in Alaska, this isn't a new experiment. We've got the Tanana Valley State Forest, the Haines State Forest, and the Southeast State Forest, and they're all good models from which to build on in the Susitna Valley. I do note one of the gentlemen, Mr. Steen, testified that he encouraged some future look at boundaries. I do note that historically, my understanding is the Tanana Forest, for example, has had at least one, maybe several modifications over its history. And so there's nothing says that we can't improve on the boundaries that are presented today. As far as the amendments, I haven't looked at them in detail, but we would give deference to DNR and the committee for working with the local community. I think if we can gain support by reducing some of those areas, perhaps they could be considered in the future for adding to the state forest to a later date. So in summary, I think this bill represents a long-term commitment to good forest management. I think the private sector is likely to respond favorably to that, and I think it's consistent with our constitutional mandate to manage these resources sustainably in the long term for the benefit of Alaskans. And really, this is right in the strike zone for RDC in terms of our mission to promote responsible resource development, and I think this hits it square on. So we really encourage you to pass the bill out of committee. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Rick. Any questions for Rick? Not seeing any. Next person there in Anchorage to testify is Andy Rogers with the State Chamber. Andy, can you hear us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Andy Rogers. No relation to the previous speaker, although I'm not sure he would claim me. We would certainly claim him if he wanted to come the Chamber's way. The Alaska Chamber is on record supporting this bill, and it's my hope that members of the committee have our letter rather available to them. It doesn't sound like there's an awful lot of opposition to this bill, so don't need to belabor our testimony and everyone's time. But I don't know Mr. Nichols, but I did appreciate his testimony. He mentioned 100-year-plus investments, 100-year-plus commitments to forestry, and that's something that rings pretty true to the business community. When you're looking at individual decisions, whether they are for families or for companies, you know, you make the best choice you can for right now. But with a piece of legislation like this, this is the state's opportunity to be good stewards of our resources to not do something in the short term, but really ensure long-term economic stability and the potential for growth. Both access to our resources and consistency and long-term stability are kind of evergreen rallying points for the State Chamber of Commerce. And I think you see it in the support for this bill. When you see businesses from all industries that we have available to us in the state, from all across the state come together on an issue that is, for the most part, a regional issue. For me anyway, it makes me sit up and pay attention. And there must be something more ideological, something more core to the activity that's making all of those businesses from across the state agree to it. So in summary, we are still in support of this bill. I won't profess to understanding the extent of the two amendments from today in their entirety, but judging by the testimony we heard and being walked through the bill, I don't anticipate that would change our support, but it's something that we'll certainly look at, and if anything does change, rest assured the committee will hear from the Alaska Chamber. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Very good. Thank you, Andy. Any questions for Andy? All right. That's the end of the list of folks that have signed up. Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing none. Claire, anyone else online? No one else online. All right. So I'm going to close public testimony at this time. I have heard, and I didn't know if we would hear from this particular concerned individual, but I have been asked to offer a conceptual amendment. So let's take a look at that. On page 32, line 2 of the bill, so it's right at the end, it's on the last page, there was concern that the management plan would not be as well written as the Tenenbaum Valley State Forest Management Plan. And so my conceptual amendment would add language from subsection E, that's ECHO, of the Tenenbaum Valley State Forest Plan. The conceptual amendment would read on page 32, line 2, so moving section 4 down, it would become section the new section 4 and renumber after. The wildlife management objective of the Susitna State Forest is the production of wildlife for a high level of sustained yield for human use through habitat improvement techniques to the extent consistent with the primary purpose of a state forest under AS 411720. So this would maximize the area for wildlife management and not just forestry, not just timber management. Is there objection to the amendment? Yes, Senator French.
I'll object just for the purpose of discussion, Madam Chair. I guess my first question is does this bill go anywhere else after it leaves here, or does it go straight to the Rules Committee?
It goes to the Rules Committee from here.
Okay.
So,
if I can just continue,
yes.
Madam Chair, then this being the only committee referral, are we going to see this prepared in a, your language sounds straightforward. It sounds perfectly adequate to me, but my own preference would be that we have it written down and give us a minute to think about it in a format rather than just doing it here on the fly. Given that this bill's been calendared for a while, the other amendment came to us in written form, and I just think it's a better process. So that's my objection.
Great. I appreciate the objection. I stand corrected. It goes to finance after this.
Then I withdraw my previous remarks.
All right. Great. But you still object for purposes of discussion?
No. I'll keep the remarks on the record, but I'll withdraw the objection.
All right. Great. Senator Michiki.
I don't have an objection, just a question. Has the state forester been consulted and he is okay with the amendment?
I'm about to invite him up to comment. Yes. That's a great question.
For the record again, my name is Chris Mache, state forester, and yes, I'm familiar with the proposed language. That same language exists currently in 411-17-400, section E for the Tanana Valley State Forest. It was added to provide that additional intent for active wildlife management, and it will be reflected in the forest management plan as it's written. So we would be in support of the conceptual amendment.
Great. Further questions? Yes, Senator Bishop.
Just a brief comment. So that should go a long ways to making the rough grouse people a lot more happier because somebody that uses the Tamino Valley State Forest for grouse hunting, it's in Fairbanks, right? So that should take care of that question, you would think, sir?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I would hope that that would definitely provide some assurance to them that we're serious about habitat management and forest management. They really go hand in hand in the boreal forest.
Thank you.
Very good. Further questions for Mr. Mache about Amendment Number 2? All right, hearing none. Do you withdraw your objection?
I do, Madam Chair.
All right, great. So Amendment Number 2 is adopted. Before you leave, Mr. Mache, do you have any closing remarks about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just that it really you heard some very good testimony on this bill, and it is a statement about long-term commitment and a sustainable resource that can be managed to help our communities. We call it active forest management, and we often refer to it as the triple bottom line. It's about society, it's about the environment, and it's about the economy. And all three of those things can work together. And when it's done right, like we do in our state forests, you can get some really good results for the people of the state. So that's all I have to say.
Great. Thank you. Any further discussion from the committee? All right. Seeing none, I will entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 28, version 28-GS1741/A as amended for committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Very good. Is there an objection? Seeing none, the bill will pass from this committee. So Senate Bill 28, version A, passes from this committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the documents. The next item on the agenda is House Bill 161. This is options for big game harvest permits. Representative Gaddis is the sponsor of the bill. She's coming forward with her staff, Reed Harris. So welcome. If you would put yourself on the record and take us through the bill. I'll also note that Doug Vincent Lang, Director of Wildlife Conservation, is online. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, committee members. My name is Representative Gaddis, and I represent District 9, the Greater Wasilla area. And I'll just get right to it. I appreciate you taking the time to hear this bill at the end. House Bill 161 updates the Governor's License Program. This is an economic process for the Department of Fish and Game to generate funds for management of the state's wildlife resource. The department may donate permits to nonprofit organizations that are incorporated in Alaska to hold big game permit auctions or raffles. The sale of relatively few permits can generate a large amount of money to fund the department's conservation and protection efforts. The Governor's License Program was created in 1997 and since 2009 has generated over $450,000 to the Fish and Game Fund. The department can issue up to 40 permits under HB 161. Statute currently allows up to 19 permits. To put the numbers in perspective, the department is issuing over 4,000 permits for big game species for 2014-2015. Historically, around half the available permits are issued, and of that half, 46% are utilized in a hunt. This means that around 25% of the total permits issued were actually used. The bill has two sections that list permits available for donation for raffle or auction, just like the current statute does. Section 1 gives 100% of the proceeds to a nonprofit under the stipulation that they use the generated funds to promote education in outdoor activities. To promote education in outdoor traditions. This section permits up to 4 Edelin Island elk, 1 bison, and 1 Dall sheep. The elk and the bison are in statute already. The sheep permit is one additional under this bill. Section 2 of the bill has permits for 2 Dall sheep and 2 bison. These 4 permits are already in statute. House Bill 161 increases the number of permits from 2 to 4 for muskox, brown or grizzly bear, moose, caribou, and wolf, and adds 4 permits each for black bear, goat, and elk. Section 2 of House Bill 161 increases the percentage a nonprofit can keep from 10% to 30%. I feel that this is necessary to incentivize groups to participate. The entirety of the money that goes to the nonprofit has to be spent on outdoor education and conservation projects in a manner approved by the department. And quite frankly, what we saw was at 10%, some of these groups raffling were leaving permits on the table. What they said is there's a certain cost to us doing business to go get out there and earn that money, and if we could get 30% to do what we would like to do under the department rules, that makes more sense. So we'll see. Time will certainly tell. But if we're leaving permits on the table and those out there are saying that if we got 30% to do what we could do, it would give us more incentive. So, again, time will tell, but I think that this raises all boats in this tide. The language change in HB 161 is twofold. To rephrase this, as the program is written now, the group retains 10% of the proceeds, and they can spend it in any manner that they want, so long as it isn't for political gain. There seems to be some conversation about that, and that really means that it can't be used for referendums, for initiatives, or quite frankly, to give to any candidate to run for, and I think we know what that means. So it cannot be used for political gain. With HB 161, they actually retain 0% of the proceeds, as they're required to spend the entirety on department-approved programs. Permits occupied by the governor's license program are taken out of the draw hunt. The program does not take permits directly from Alaskan hunters. When a resident hunter enters into the drawing for most hunts, that person has the same chance of winning a permit as a non-resident hunter. This bill does not allow for an out-of-season of special hunts in closed areas. It does not allow for helicopters and other advantages to be used in tracking, hunting, or transporting big game. If a permit is donated to a nonprofit under this program and the permit does not sell, it is re-entered into the drawing pool. Or if in late in the season sold over the counter, these sales are mainly to resident hunters. My office has worked closely with the department as well as a large number of sporting groups to create the bill to benefit hunters and ensure that the department has continued funding to manage this valuable resource well into the future. My staff and I are available right now for questions. As noted, we have Doug Vincent Ling online if there are specific questions for the department. So thank you.
Very good. Reed, did you have anything to add?
For the record, no.
All right. So we'll go right to Doug Vincent Lang, Director of Wildlife Conservation online. Doug, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can.
Great. Go ahead and give us your testimony.
Well, I'm mostly available for questions, but I will re-echo everything that Representative Gaddis said. You know, the bill is basically an attempt to get our governor's tag program in a more efficient and effective manner. And basically what we're trying to do is realize that if we give a greater percentage of these program receipts from these governor's tags to a private nonprofit to keep, the hope is that rising tide will rise all ships, including the contribution back to the department. But perhaps most importantly, it forms really foundational partnerships with the conservation community in that they get to keep 30%, but that 30% they get to keep is really focused on providing conservation and education programs, you know, that ensures that we have a future foundation of hunters across and fishers across our state. And they have to do those projects in partnership, you know, with our approval, you know, with our approval in the future. So I think overall this program is going to benefit the department. It's going to benefit the conservation community, in essence, by ensuring that we have a steady source of funding for outdoor education and conservation programs.
Great. Thank you, Doug, for your testimony. We have a list of folks of invited testimony, so I'm going to start going through them. I think they're randomly listed here. First person online is Senator Con Bundy under invited testimony. Senator Bundy. Oh, pardon me. Hang on one second. Senator Bishop, did you have a question?
I'm sorry.
Yes, for Doug.
For Doug.
Pardon me. I didn't see you.
That's fine. Doug, are you still there?
I am.
Hey, I've got a quick question. I've been reading a lot of, been getting a lot of mail on this, and I got a question for you. Is our helicopters going to be allowed for the harvest of the sheep?
No, our intention is to basically put the same conditions as the Board of Game puts on these hunts for these species. So our condition is when we put the permit out, that will follow what the board has for legal hunting seasons for those species in those areas.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions for Doug? Okay, seeing none, now we'll go to Senator Con Bundy. Welcome, Senator.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman. Hello, am I on?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. Go ahead and give us your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to testify. Ask your indulgence. I'm not quite as familiar being on this side of the microphone than on your side. And if I might ask also if you'd convey my greetings and respects to my former colleagues, I would appreciate that.
Of course.
I was the original author of the governor's tags bill. I've had the good fortune of being able to know some hunting, I would call them philanthropists, who are many pay grades above mine, and they return to the sport substantial financial support, and the governor's tags was a vehicle to do that. It met some resistance, but I think it has generally been accepted as a good idea. I know in other states it has worked very, very well, but like all legislation, after some trial and error time, it can stand some tweaking, and I'm just calling to let you know that I'm supportive of House Bill 161 and the changes that it adds to the original bill. As you and the committee members are well aware, Department of Fish and Game and the management of our hunting opportunities are supported by license fees and various taxes that are involved, and of course the money doesn't come from the general fund. So by expanding the governor's tags as House Bill 161 would do, it will provide needed support for the Department of Fish and Game, and I'm also involved with hunter education at various levels, and am personally aware that the original proposal to give 10% to these nonprofit people who promote outdoor education just wasn't adequate to meet their cost of doing business and have enough left over to have any significant impact on their program. So with that, just to reiterate that I do support the changes. I think that it is a win-win situation and do not see any negative aspects of the proposal. So thank you again for an opportunity to testify. Wish you all well down there in your final challenges at the end of the session, and if there are questions, I'd be available.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Senator Bundy? Senator Dyson has one for you.
Yeah, Con, I talked to you a couple of weeks ago. You were hunting somewhere. Were you successful?
I had a great time in Arizona where they have an invasive species of doves, and so they have no limit and no season, and the doves are good eating. So it's a good combination.
So you were very helpful to the local efforts.
Well, we do what we can to keep the dairy farmers happy.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Any other questions for Senator Bundy? All right, seeing none, thank you very much, Senator. Next person on the list is Brian Judy with the NRA. Brian, can you hear us?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Judy. I am the Alaska State Liaison for the National Rifle Association, speaking this afternoon in support of House Bill 161. NRA looks at this bill as a win-win-win for game management in Alaska, Alaska nonprofits, and Alaska sportsmen and women. As you heard, it increases from 19 to 42 the number of permits available for auction. That's an increase of just one-half of 1% of the total of 4,000 permits available each year. Also, as you've heard, increases the percentage of money going to the nonprofits from 10 to 30%. And the hope and intention here is to provide a greater incentive for Alaska groups to make these permits available and for their members, the hunters, to bid on them. And this should result in more money for the department. Money is the money that the nonprofits generate is earmarked for promotion of education and outdoor traditions and conservation and wildlife protection programs in partnership with the department. Full disclosure, this bill won't benefit NRA, but it could potentially, to the extent they choose to participate, benefit our Alaska arm of the NRA Foundation, the Friends of the NRA nonprofit program. And just as a few examples of some of the programs that have received Friends of NRA money in the past, Youth Shotgun League, Small Game Hunting Clinics, Scholastic Clay Target Program, the Women on Target Program, Youth Education Summit, and the Becoming an Outdoors Woman Program. So a lot of good programs for sportsmen and youth and women. In summary, this bill, House Bill 161, should generate more money for the department, more money for Alaska nonprofits to use for education, conservation, and wildlife protection, and result in better hunting for Alaska sportsmen and women as a result of the money raised and spent from the proceeds generated from House Bill 161. We urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Judy. Any questions for him? All right, seeing none. Next one on the list is Elaine Spraker from Soldotna Women on Target. Elaine, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me testify today. My name is Elena Spraker, and I am currently the clinic director for a program, Women on Target and Teens on Target on the Kenai Peninsula. Our program started about 6 years ago where we took 8 to 10 teenage girls and trained them in firearm training, which included shotgun, pistol, and rifle. From there, the mothers wanted to also learn firearm training, and we started our Women on Target program. It is our fourth year coming up on Women on Target this summer. Matter of fact, right now I'm at Snowshoe Gun Club getting ready for our registration for the upcoming summertime clinics. We're going to give a new meaning to the word Black Friday because we're going to have about 100 to 150 women at the doors here in less than an hour. We had over 100 on a wait list trying to get into these clinics. I support HB 161 because it's these organizations like Safari Club, Friends of the NRA, Hunter Heritage, that make this program doable. We only charge $35 for these women to join these clinics, and we'll shoot up to $900 worth of ammo per clinic in some of the clinics. Without the support of these nonprofits coming in and supporting our program, we would not be able to do what we do. So, therefore, I really encourage you to support HB 161. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Elena. Any questions? Senator Michiki has a question.
Just a little bit of praise. I talk about teens and women on target all the time, and thanks for all you did with my 18-year-old, Elena. It's a great program.
It was a pleasure, just a pleasure. Yep, we're changing women's lives when we're opening a whole new world for them, and this is a very, very valuable program.
Great, thank you. Any other questions for Elena? Seeing none. Next person is Dan McMahon, invited testimony. Dan, can you hear us? Not there. Okay, great. Mike Crawford in Kenai with SCI. Mike, can you hear us?
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and committee members. My name is Mike Crawford. I reside just outside the city limits of Soldotna, Alaska. Today I'm going to represent the Alaska's Kenai Peninsula chapter of Safari Club International. Safari Club International has 50,000 members worldwide, 200 chapters worldwide. Two of those chapters are in Alaska. Our two chapters in Alaska are considered leaders amongst the chapters. We're both award-winning chapters. We do lots of good things. The national part of Safari Club International has spent over $1 million in the last years supporting fish and game projects. Some of those include Kenai moose research, chronic wasting disease on Kodiak Island, Kodiak brown bear studies, and the reintroduction of the wood bison. Some of the things that we've supported are the Alaska Outdoor Heritage Foundation, National Archery in the Schools Program, the Women on Target and Teens on Target programs that you've heard of just now, and other youth shooting sports. We also give a $4,000 scholarship, college scholarship each year. We also have a very successful and very popular women and kids pheasant hunt every fall where we teach sportsmanship and gun safety. We are good at raising funds to fulfill our mission. We want to make the Department of Fish and Game money. We understand that fish and game needs money for conservation of our wildlife. We are not being greedy and wanting to further our own work. We want to further our own work for conservation of wildlife, working with fish and game on their projects. Recently, a Toke sheet tag sold for over $160,000. These funds will go a long way for fish and game. I do not believe that passage of this bill will be a loss of revenue for the state, but an increase of revenue. This bill will not eliminate other organizations any organizations that now qualify to get these tags. I believe Fish and Game is in full support of this bill. Safari Club International looks forward to growing our partnership with Fish and Game to further opportunity for conservation, education, and hunter opportunity. I'll be in Juneau this coming Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and look forward to further discussion of the merits of this bill with any of you. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mike. Any questions for Mike? All right, not seeing any. The next person on the invited list is Mike Tinker. Mike, can you hear us?
Yes, Madam Chairman, I hope so. I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska today.
Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. Go ahead and give us your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, and members of the Resource Committee. I'm testifying this afternoon on behalf of the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association, and some of you are familiar with our group. We're a 45-year-old group of Alaskans, mostly in Fairbanks, although we have some in the outback, who work continually on resource, especially fish and wildlife issues. Some of our products resulted in the passage of Alaska's intensive management law, where we were actively trying to get
Alaskans out of the competition business for the last moose and into producing more wildlife for our use. Most recently, a clarification on the use of the referendum process for allocation, where we'll hope to have got you out of a wolf and anti-hunting type referendums for a good long time to come, and we certainly thank the legislature for their help with those. We also fight some of the battles that you in government cannot, from the standpoint of the view of people who attack us that are anti-hunters, and those type of national and international organizations who seek to use our Alaska management principles to raise money for their various causes. And I want to speak to you today just cautiously about 161 and let you know that we do not have any problem at all with the concept of raising more money for the Department of Fish and Game or for spending it in some of the ways that this this proposal changes and focuses on. I myself was a and have been an instructor in the Becoming an Outdoor Woman program since its inception. And so I have firsthand knowledge of working with new and folks who have never hunted before who wanted to get into the game. So I definitely understand those type of things. But what we look for from you is that the endpoint of the legislation gets to the intent of where, in this case, Representative Gaddis originally intended it to go without negative consequences. And we have some cautions on this one. The legislation we would like it to produce the desired effect, and that is to raise some money. As introduced originally, it didn't do that very well, and it's been changed fairly significantly to do that, and we understand that the sponsors and the or those helping the sponsors and some of the naysayers are still talking together to make it work more. I'm probably not the very best one to talk about the amount of money that you seek to attract new NGOs to get into this business, but I will put on the records, and I don't have all the details, that some of the ones that have handled the present Governor's Day permits have not kept a dollar for themselves. So this idea that we're going to attract people by offering them 25 or 30%, something more, is kind of a pipe dream out there. A foundation for wild sheep, for example, has taken the governor's doll sheep permit, sold it for tons of money, and turned every dollar that they didn't use in advertising and that kind of thing right back over to the department for the Fish and Game Fund. One of the other things is that money that gets earmarked in here for some educational programs isn't able to be matched by the federal Pittman Robertson funds, so that, for example, creating the money and earmarking it in those situations may not be, again, getting to the desired intent of putting money into the program where the department would like it to go next. And that is a significant thing. If in the example just cited by the Safari Club International representative, they'd taken that $1 million, given it to the department for the Fish and Game Fund, they'd then had $4 million to spend on those programs, rather than the $1 million that was designated out to the various projects. Looking for a consistent approach in fundraising for them, we're looking into right now with some members of the legislature, license and tag fee situations, and getting the department and the boards and the public and the legislature to work together. One of the strong things here is that you are voicing support for additional funds for the department, and we think that's a great idea. We have some problems in that regard with right now with compliance for licensing versus harvest, and we're a little kind of set back by the fact that the department has been on the table telling that there is no cost to this, and yet at the same time, if you read through the bill, there is an administrative cost, there is a management cost in putting together these agreements and that kind of thing. And those may not be significant, but the cost of 161 is certainly not zero. Cautiously, we would like to see them get some additional cash into that Fish and Game Fund. We're not sure that this vehicle is can be shown to get them where they want to go right now. We would urge that you have at least one additional hearing to get more input. I know it's very limited today. And I would point out, for example, if you look at the sectional analysis sheet you have down under the bullets on the first page, you go 1, 2, 3, 4, and 4 says the donation program will be healthier as its appeal has been broadened. And I don't think there's anything out there in private practice that either the big organizations that sell these permits at raffle or some of the smaller NGOs, I don't think that can be sustained, that you have a broader appeal if you have 42 permits instead of 19 permits, something like that. So I'm cautiously optimistic we'll get somewhere here, but I'm telling you that there are some problems associated with this that make it not as not as successful in the application as it is in the discussion. Thank you, Madam Chairman. If you have questions, I'll be glad to take them.
Thank you, Mike. The question is for Mike. Senator Bishop has a question for you.
Madam Chairman, with your approval, could we ask him if his comments are written and if he could forward them to the committee?
Of course, sure. Did you hear that, Mike? Can you send your comments in writing?
Yes, Madam Chairman, I actually have sent an email to your office earlier today. I'm sorry I didn't get it to the whole committee. Some of us here in Fairbanks are buried neck deep in the Arctic Winter Games this week. Time is premium. I will be glad to prepare more comments. You have these same issues in the basic form in the record. I think your staff got them this afternoon. But I'll make them available to you again if you need to.
Mike, we have your email from either today or the day before. I know I've got a lot, and I've handed them all out to committee members, but your testimony was much more in-depth, and I believe that's what Senator Bishop was looking for, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right, great. So we'll look forward to receiving that. The next person under invited testimony is Dana Lingefelt. Dana, are you there?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to address you regarding House Bill 161. Your support of the changes outlined in HB 161 is an important component in funding outdoor education opportunities for Alaskans. In my view, the funds generated from the governor's license proceeds will directly provide opportunity to more Alaskans to become educated, ethical users of our natural resources. My name is Dana Feluca Lingefelt. I am a member of the Board of Directors for the Outdoor Heritage Foundation and have participated in Becoming an Outdoors Woman workshops, hunter information and training clinics, and have earned my Hunter Ed and Muzzleloader certifications through the Department of Fish and Game. The department program sponsored in conjunction with organizations such as the Rough Grouse Society, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Alaska Bowhunters Association, Safari Club, NRA, and the Outdoor Heritage Foundation have provided ladies like myself the knowledge and the confidence to spot and stalk big game, fly fish in the best rivers on earth, shoot proficiently with a variety of firearms and archery equipment, survive out in the Alaskan wilderness, the skills to field dress and care for my own animal, and even how to cook it up on a campfire built by me. In addition to developing a deep appreciation for the science and the biologists that keep it all in balance, as a result of these programs, I have become a purchaser of fishing, trapping, and hunting licenses and tags, all of which contributes to the revenue times three and the strength of the Department of Fish and Game. The economic impact of these education programs, I have personally been stimulated to contribute over $47,000 to the Alaskan economy since taking my first BOW workshop in 2004. I have met countless women who tell me that these programs have changed their lives. Many now use their education and skills acquired through department programs to teach their own sons and daughters the joys of outdoor pursuits. Hoping to pass on my knowledge and love for the outdoors, I now volunteer to teach outdoor skills at BOW workshops. Alaskan education opportunities supported by the governor's license proceeds would include outdoor youth camps in Fairbanks and Anchorage, the National Archery in the Schools program statewide, Becoming an Outdoor Woman and fishing clinics for ladies and families, small and big game hunting clinics, and additional certification programs to address Alaskan hunters' needs. I believe that outdoor education produces caring conservationists and responsible users of Alaskan resources, ensuring all of our enjoyment for generations to come.
Please support HB 161 and pass it out of committee. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time this afternoon.
Great. Thank you for your testimony, Dana. Any questions for Dana from committee members? All right, not seeing any. There's one last person on the invited testimony list, and that's Mike Griffin. Mike, can you hear us? Is he still online, Claire? Not seeing him. Okay, so I'm going to cross Mike off. I know that there are people who wish to testify. There are actually five names here, but we are approaching 5 p.m. So what I'm going to do is keep public testimony open, and we will continue public testimony on this bill at our next available time slot. So for now, we'll hold the bill over then. Thank you, Representative Gaddis.
Madam Chair, actually, we've got a
brief at ease. Thank you very much, Representative Gaddis. I will say that I will plan to put this bill on the Saturday meeting, which is not tomorrow, but a week from the Saturday. I believe it's March 29th, though I don't have a calendar. I'm just sort of calculating it. But next Saturday, we'll be meeting at 10 a.m., and so folks can call in and testify during public testimony then. All right, so at this time, we've come to the end of our agenda. Our next meeting will be on Monday, the usual time. Next week is what I'm calling Fish Week, where we have a diverse and inclusive list of fishery user groups and stakeholders to participate in the Upper Cook Inlet Salmon Dialogue. This week will be invitational only. We've got very diverse groups. No bills or decisions will be made during Fish Week on fisheries issues. This is simply informative. It was a very controversial fishing season last summer, and fisheries do come under resources, so we'll just be kind of getting information. Our meetings all of next week will probably go till 5:30, so just FYI. And I have scheduled a Saturday meeting to pick up some of these bills, such as the one we heard today. So at this time, the meeting will be adjourned. The time is 4:57 p.m. Thank you.